The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
With the shot. Yes, sir. What's going on, everybody? Welcome into First Take on a Tuesday. Stephen A. Smith, Max Kellerman, Amali Karam Rose. Fellas, this man is unreal. Continuing to have jaw-dropping nights. He's setting records daily. For his latest feat, Curry poured in 49, 20 of them in the fourth quarter in a 107-96 win over the Philadelphia 76ers on Monday night, becoming the first player in NBA history age 33 or older to score 30 or more points in 11 straight games, passing Lakers legend Kobe Bean Bryant, who scored at least 30 in 10 straight games. That was in December of 2012. Stephen A., is this the best Steph has ever been in his career?
I think he looks it right now. And here's the reason why I would say this, because it's without Klay Thompson on the court. That's why. See, no matter what greatness you saw from Steph Curry during his MVP, his back-to-back MVP years, when you looked at him and you saw Klay Thompson on the court with him, who was an elite marksman in his own right, and the crew that they had assembled, obviously, as great as Steph Curry was, you could marvel at it while at the same time recognizing the fact that you had to pay attention to somebody else who's a pretty elite shooter himself, and that is Klay Thompson, who I believe to be one of the top five shooters in the history of basketball. I think Klay Thompson is that elite of a marksman himself. But when you look at what's transpiring this year, and you look from an offensive perspective of what what Steph Curry has around him and what he's doing, averaging 31, 6, and 5 on 43% shooting from three-point range. And this is like before April, he had a little stretch there where he was struggling with some three-point outputs or whatever. This dude is the elite marksman in the history of basketball, the greatest shooter we have ever seen, the greatest shooter that God ever created. I'm telling you, this is what he is, and everybody knows it, and it's no longer a deniable issue. Now, I don't have him as my league MVP, but my apologies to him. He definitely needs to be included in the conversation. He's not a top two, might not even be a top three candidate for league MVP honors because the Golden State Warriors are an average team. But when I look at his greatness, it speaks for itself. And when you look at it in terms of his performance this year, the greatness that we're witnessing without Klay Thompson is what really stands out in my mind. Those other performances, as great as he was in the past, Klay Thompson was on the court with him. Klay Thompson's not there this year. You know he's the lone option offensively for the Golden State Warriors, and you still can't stop him.
Yeah, let's get Max in.
No, as great as Steph Curry is right now, and he is in the MVP conversation undeniably, he just put himself there. He forced himself there. Look, before the season, I thought Luka was going to win MVP. I thought Steph would be way up there because he has to carry more load, because there is no Klay Thompson, because of course he's going to shoot it more. Who else is going to shoot it on that team? So I'm not impressed beyond where I thought I would be, except when your eyes are on Steph Curry, you go, oh, my God, how can something be better than this? In 2015-16, when they won 73 games, Stephen A., it was even better. I mean, it's virtually the same player, right? But that's the thing. He was the same player back then. I mean, his game has evolved a little, sure. He stole the ball more frequently then. I looked up the stats. They're almost identical, but he had twice as many steals. But he does some things now with more, listen, he's more experienced now. But the difference is he was doing that in a league that wasn't ready. It's one of the reasons they won 73 games before KD. 73 games. And I know you're watching now, you go, oh, my God, he just dropped 47. He dropped it. He was dropping. He had multiple 50-point games, 51, 50, 50-something. He had tons of 40-point games that year. It's easy to forget when your eyes aren't on him that year what he was doing then. But he was doing it in a league where no one else was. That has even more value. Now you have Damian Lillard. Oh, look at that. I could shoot from way out there. Let me try this. You have Trae Young. You have other guys where Steph has shown the way, and now they're doing it too, making it still incredible, but not the same kind of impact it had back then. Of course, they had Klay then, Iguodala, Draymond Green was shooting better. Stephen A., all that stuff is true, and that contributed, obviously, mightily to those 73 wins. But my God, what Steph was doing back then, there was a reason he was MVP, and we all said, yeah, he's MVP. Look, right now, the Portland Trailblazers' record isn't amazing. The Nuggets' record isn't amazing, and we're looking at Jokic and Damian Lillard, and Steph is in that category. Back then, it was Steph Curry as MVP, retire the prize.
Well, I disagree. Like I said, you can point to the greatness of Steph Curry, and a lot of people will point to what he did in 2016 particularly. But my point is that when you have a marksman, an elite marksman on a court with you, and that distracts the defense, that plays a role in what you're capable of doing. It's almost like if I go on the court, if you go on the court with LeBron James, you're going to be better. Because LeBron James is elite and attracts such a clear amount of attention that it's going to make things easier for the people around him. Steph Curry had Klay back in the past. He doesn't have Klay this year. And when you look at what he's doing anyway, you just have to marvel at it. And his conditioning, his movement without the basketball, it's just something special to behold, the ball handling skills, the jump shooting, all of that stuff. But, Max, I looked up a stat here I want to throw by you, okay, a few of them. I have in front of me, Max, threes that Steph Curry has hit against each team in the NBA this year, okay? In two games against Atlanta, all right, he's hit 18 of 33 threes, all right? In two games against Chicago, it's 11 of 29 threes. In two games against Cleveland, it's 11 of 24 threes. In two games against Dallas and Denver, it's 15 of 29 threes. Against Detroit in two games, it's 11 of 17 threes. Against Houston in two games, it's 10 of 26 threes. Against the Clippers, it's 11 of 28 threes. Against Miami, it's 10 of 31 threes. Against Minnesota, it's 11 of 23 threes. Against New York, the Knicks, it's 12 of 28 threes in two games. Against Orlando, it's 16 of 35 threes. Against Philly, against last night, the only game he played against them this year, it's 10 of 17 threes. Against Damian Lillard in Portland, it's 17 of 42 threes. Against San Antonio in three games, it's 14 of 29 threes. Against Utah, it's 11 of 19 threes in two games. I mean, my God. I mean, do you understand that if you shoot,
but you know
35% from three-point range, that's considered decent? Look at the numbers that I threw out to you. Against a slew of opponents, elite and otherwise, it does not matter. This brother is something
to behold. But you know what that adds up to?
As a marksman. Yes.
I put stats up in front of me while you were doing that. You know what that adds up to? It adds up to 12 threes a game, and he's hitting 43% of them, which is amazing. It's why he's in the MVP conversation now. In 2015-16, when he won MVP and his team won 73 games, he shot 11 threes. But 11 threes back then is more than 12 threes now. The league caught on. James Harden and the Rockets, everyone caught on. Oh, we're supposed to be shooting all these threes. And everyone became better three-point shooters. So what he's doing in the context of his league now is not the same as then. And Stephen A., I could read off all the numbers because they sound very similar. 11.2 threes then, 12.1 threes now. He hit 45% of his threes then. He's shooting 43 now. So in that league back then, taking 11 threes and hitting over 45% of them, my God. And as you said, of course, Klay opens things up. You have to pay attention. You're not paying attention to Steph. But he was doing that on a team with Klay and Dre and Iggy and all those guys in the service of winning and becoming the dominant team. We thought they were going to win the championship that year. Of course he's got to take all these shots now, because who else is going to take them? I'm saying they're very similar players. We're splitting hairs. But when I look at the hungry Steph Curry from back then, showing the world a new way to play basketball, I think it has even more value than what he's doing today.
Well, you could say it might have even more value because he did it and they were competing for a championship. I say to you, however, it's an individual award, and the fact that Klay Thompson was on the court with you did a lot to help you. He doesn't have Klay Thompson's help this year, and it's phenomenal. But where I disagree with Magic Johnson, respectfully, of course, because he's the great Magic Johnson, is that when we talk about the MVP, The Golden State Warriors are 29-29. They're a 500 team trying to squeeze into the playoffs as a ninth seed. The Joker, on the same night Steph Curry did this, dropped 47, albeit in double overtime. He dropped 47 last night, brought them back from a deficit, and Denver's a top four team in the Western Conference, eight games better than the Golden State Warriors. I can't ignore that.
Something to add to that, no one has ever won MVP with a record worse than seventh. And obviously, as you just mentioned, they're ninth there. Guys, I got one more number for you. 263s on the season thus far, only 50 games in. All right, breaking news this morning here into First Take as we transition to the NFL. The Pittsburgh Steelers, Stephen A's team, announcing they've signed coach Mike Tomlin to a three-year extension through at least the 2024 season. Since becoming the Steelers head coach in 2007, Tomlin is 145-78-1 in the regular season, 8-8 in the postseason, and 1-1 in Super Bowl. Speaking of Super Bowl, Stephen A, your team has not been to one in over 12 years. So with that being said, how much pressure is on Mike Tomlin with this new contract extension?
Well, I don't think there's that much pressure on him. I mean, obviously, there's always some degree of pressure because you represent and steal a nation. I would remind everybody, however, that in 14 years as the head coach of the Pittsburgh Steelers, Mike Tomlin has never had a losing season. Not one time. Not one time. Okay, so we have to take that into consideration as well. We also have to take into consideration the plethora of individuals who are getting jobs that they didn't deserve. Adam Gase, thank God he's gone. He never deserved a job in New York. Kingsbury, I don't know whether he deserves the job or not in Arizona. Don't get me started with that. Mike McCarthy was picked off the scrap heap, and he's now the head coach in Dallas. You look around the National Football League, and there's a whole bunch of coaches with far more suspect resumes that have jobs in the NFL as head coaches. So when I look at it from that perspective, I don't want to hear about Mike Tomlin, you know, being under pressure any more than, you know, what he's normally under. You need to win when you're in Pittsburgh. You need to be a respectable team. I think he needs to get a running game. I think continuing to improve that secondary definitely, or getting somebody to rush the pass, all of those things are important. There are elements that he can address, but in the end, there is no question. The record speaks for itself. 145-78-1. That's winning 65% of your games. This man does that. He has never had a losing record in 14 years. He is very, very well deserving of his job. And in a day and age, a time where we're looking at minorities and lamenting the state of affairs that exists as it pertains to the hiring of minority coaches in the National Football League, I'll be damned if anybody could sit here and tell me that this dude, who happens to be a minority, an African-American, deserves to lose his job anytime in the foreseeable future. Not with that resume. As far as I'm concerned, he's one of the standards. Congratulations and props to him. He deserves the damn extension as far as I'm concerned. And I'm very, very happy for him, and I'm proud of him.
Stephen A., I understand why you're responding to critics of Mike Tomlin, but I got to tell you, you don't have to sit here and make excuses for his extension. Are we living in bizarro world? Mike Tomlin, you can pencil them in for double-digit wins every season of his career as a coach. Oh, but sometimes he wins eight games. Yeah, when they don't have Ben Roethlisberger, he wins eight games. He's always been coaching in Bill Belichick's shadow. But what happened when Bill Belichick lost Tom Brady? Did he get to a 500 record? No, he was a game under 500. Could have easily been over, but wasn't. Mike Tomlin now looks a little different, doesn't he? No excuses for Mike Tomlin. He doesn't accept any for himself or anyone else. The worst he ever does, including without Roethlisberger, is an 8-8 season, but on average wins more than double digits. I cannot believe, and you bring up the racial angle, and I'm not going to deny that should be touched upon, but I don't care if he's purple or green or yellow, whatever he is. You give me a coach with Mike Tomlin's resume, you show me a team that played the way the Steelers did last year with, by the way, an ancient quarterback coming off a catastrophic injury who really couldn't get the ball down the field, an offensive line that couldn't block, consequently no running game, and they still won as many games as they did. Double digits, back to double digit wins. The fact that we are actually sitting here on TV and you feel the need to justify, and I understand you're answering critics of the deal, but justify Mike T- Tomlin getting an extension? Has the world gone crazy? He's one of the all-time great coaches. He's got a Super Bowl win. He's never had a losing season. He wins two-thirds of his games. I just don't understand the world I'm living in sometimes.
Let me try to enlighten you. Although I know you were speaking facetiously, let me tell you something right now. You may not care whether or not he was purple or whatever. I happen to care about the fact that he is a black man and he is succeeding, because the reality of the situation is that he walked in there with a very daunting task, because as an African-American, to be placed in the position that he's placed into, the expectations, the pressure, the obligations that come along with it, all of those things are things that get attached to these coaches and are used religiously as excuses to deny African-Americans in leadership positions as leaders of men, at least compared to their white contemporaries, numbers-wise. We've seen it time and time again. I know Matt LaFleur is doing a really good job in Green Bay, although I've disagreed with some of his decision-making from time to time. I know he's doing a good job, but it doesn't escape me that he got the job when he was the offensive coordinator in Tennessee for the 27th-ranked offense. I never forgot that. I know that Cliff Kingsbury might end up doing a good job in Arizona because they've had their good moments, and Kyler Murray can really quarterback. But it doesn't escape me that he was never really that relevant on the collegiate level, didn't coach on the NFL level, but somehow leapfrogged over a bunch of people to get that head coaching job. It doesn't escape me that Eric Bieniemy is the offensive coordinator of a juggernaut of an offense in Kansas City and couldn't even get a job. And then now, who does he get hurt by? He gets hurt by another African-American in Todd Bowles, who obviously could have easily stayed on as the head coach with the New York Jets, but you moved on from him and brought in some dude who showed up high at the press conference, or at least looking high, and Adam Gase. Todd Bowles shows out as defensive coordinator in Tampa, and now everybody says, well, you know what? Eric Bieniemy, that was his chance. He'll never get another one now, because if you're going to look for a head coach, you'll probably look in the direction of the Todd Bowles of the world. So you use that one African-American to literally minimize somebody that never deserved to be minimized in Eric Bieniemy. We see all types of garbage, of nonsense going on in the National Football League, on a college football level as well, when it comes to African-American coaches. Mike Tomlin knows this. He has spoken out about it. He has spoken out against it, and still showed up on the field and had to validate that African-Americans can be leaders of men by the leadership that he's shown over the Steelers franchise for the last 14 years. So I care. I care a great deal. And I'm sure you do as well, Max. But I care a great deal. That's what it's about.
I understand. That's why I began the comment by saying the racial angle is real, and it's good that you touched on it. I agree with that part. What I'm saying is, apart from the racial angle, even if you didn't touch it and just looked at the resume of Mike Tomlin as a head coach, why are we even talking about answering critics who, if there are still critics out there, coming off a double-digit win season? If I had a coach of any kind who coached as long as Tomlin, never had a losing record, even when he didn't have his quarterback, and was coming off of double-digit wins, I'd be like, yeah, Sherlock, no kidding, he got a three-year extension.
There's an easy answer, Max. There's a four-time Super Bowl champion as a quarterback, formerly of the Pittsburgh Steelers, named Terry Bradshaw, the great Terry Bradshaw, who basically said that Mike Tomlin was just a rah-rah coach. He was all about motivation, not necessarily strong with X's and O's and stuff like that. Remember that? Remember that? There are people out there that were thinking like that.
Well, you know what?
And he was one of them.
First Take fans, listen up. Have you heard you can listen to episodes of this very show ad-free on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership? That's right. All your favorite First Take episodes can be heard on Amazon Music ad-free. But that's not all. You can listen to other top podcasts like The Low Post and PTI ad-free as well. They also have favorite shows like The Daily, Part of My Take, and Up First, all without ads. You know what this means? Uninterrupted listening, so no more cliffhangers. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts, so we know they definitely have something for you. And it's already included in your Prime membership. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app for free or go to Amazon.com/First Take. That's Amazon.com/First Take to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
I'm aware that there's some fan discontent with our wide receivers and our drafting and all that. I mean, but in general, I look at our record and how we win games and how we play football, and I'm proud of the team. It's insulting to these guys when they hear that we don't have any receivers. It's quite insulting. I'm insulted by it, too, to be honest. So I know this. I think Lamar likes our receivers, you know. I think our coaches like our receivers. I think the teammates, the guys in this team, like our receivers. And that's my answer to that question.
All right, that was Ravens GM Eric DaCosta. Dan Orlovsky making a face there. Can't wait to hear what you have to say about this. Let's not forget the Ravens did finish 11-5, but he finds the comments insulting. Max, do you think they were?
Yeah, they're insulting to Lamar Jackson. His comments are insulting to Lamar Jackson. And I know why he's doing it. He's defending his team. He really is defending his team, but at the same time, he's defending himself as a GM. Look, if you took a straw poll, name the teams with the worst receiving cores. The Ravens would be way up on that list or way down, depending on how you look at it. They don't have an elite receiving core or an average receiving core. At the very least, the perception, not just by the fans, but by the media who covers it, the analysts, is that the Ravens have one of the lesser receiving cores in the league. You can see the young guys on the team, and Hollywood Brown can play. He doesn't look like a number one, but he's a real receiver. But who else? Like, you know, who else on the team is really a starting receiver that you're confident about saying he's a starting receiver? Because if you can name any of the young guys, why is Dez Bryant, or rather the remains of Dez Bryant, getting burned over the young guys? Why? They don't have guys who can actually get separation. Right? They don't have, I mean, let's be honest about it. So if you don't have a good receiving core, if they would be ranked not only in the bottom half, but probably the bottom quarter of the league, then what are you really saying to defend them? What comment are you really making? Oh, no, it's not the receivers. Lamar's got to do a better job. Well, he does have to do a better job. But really, is that the problem the Ravens have, that Lamar's not doing a good enough job? Or have you even controlled for the variable of the receiving core? If he had a better receiving core, like if you said, what's the issue with the Ravens? They need to give Lamar more weapons on offense, more dynamic weapons, more guys who can get open and catch the ball. It doesn't just mean vertical threats or Orlovsky. It means, you know, high-level receivers. They don't have it. So, yeah, I do think the comment is insulting, and whether it or not it was meant to be, it's insulting to Lamar Jackson.
Well, you can look at it that way, and maybe it is. I'm just insulted to people with – you know, I don't appreciate DaCosta insulting people for having common sense. This was the worst ranked passing attack in the entire National Football League. They ranked 32 out of 32. What the hell do you want us to do? Give you cookies? and act like you did something right? What the hell are you talking about?
Right.
And DaCosta, be happy. You know what? Listen, here's what DaCosta needs to recognize. You're succeeding somebody. You're the successor to somebody very, very special.
Yeah.
His name would happen to be Ozzie Newsome, considered one of the great, great executives the National Football League has ever seen. Okay? Clearly, you came up at least for a little while under him. I promise you, Ozzie Newsome would have never had that damn press conference, yeah, knowing that he had the 32nd ranked passing attack in the National Football League, which, by the way, the year before was ranked 27th in the league. I guarantee you that. Okay? So why is it that the public is talking about your wide receivers? I don't know. Maybe because you can't pass. That might have something to do with it. Okay? So for people to, for him to come out front and center, talking about, oh, my goodness, it's insulting. No. You're insulting the intelligence of anybody with common sense
about
football. That's what you're doing. We didn't say Hollywood Brown can't play, or Miles Boykin can't play. We certainly didn't say Mark Andrews couldn't play. What we said is we don't see the results. You clearly appear to have a problem. And by the way, the last 2 years, they've had the number one rushing attack in football. And why is that? Was that because Mark Ingram or somebody? No. It was because you got a runner at the quarterback position that's electrifying in Lamar Jackson. And because of his ability to run, because this is a quarterback that rushed for over 1,000 yards, that would have something to do with it. So DaCosta, stop it. Just stop it. You're insulted. Okay. We're insulted
right.
that you're
Let's
insulted.
Let's let Dan respond.
Yeah. I agree with Stephen A. I think DaCosta is part of a great organization, but I'm insulted that you think I'm insulting you by questioning your receivers. You guys continue to mention last year, and that's right. The last two years, the Baltimore Ravens wide receivers are last in catches and last in yards. That's in the midst of your quarterback winning MVP one of those years. It's not a Lamar thing. Mark Andrews' production isn't falling off. He's still one of the best tight ends in football. The receivers aren't good enough, Eric DaCosta, and you know that. And I think he's just covering face within that press conference, because if you thought your young receivers were good enough, why did you offer Juju Smith-Schuster $12 million a year? That would be my question. If you thought they were good enough, and you thought those young, promising receivers were good enough, and it's insulting to insinuate that they're not, then why did you offer Juju that contract? Because you did. And I would make the claim that the Ravens receivers, job-wise, is one of the easiest in the NFL. Stephen A., you referenced the run game, right? All those defenders are down near the line of scrimmage because they're paying attention to the run. Those receivers for Baltimore, they don't have to beat double coverage consistently. It's usually one-on-one, corner deep. Everybody else is down near the ball because they got to stop the run. That's easy. We're not asking you to do what a Michael Thomas or DeAndre Hopkins or Stephon Diggs, and that's win on the outside against double coverage. You just got to beat one-on-one coverage. And so for the lack of production to be what it is, the tape to be what it is, the fact that you offer Juju and the easiest job, he knows that they need to upgrade the wide receiver position. Eric DaCosta knows that, and I feel very confidently that they will try to draft a receiver in the first round. I would take Rashad Bateman from Minnesota if I were them. That would be a huge upgrade because they need size on the outside. Every one of the receivers is smaller. They're compact guys. Mark Andrews, big tight end. They need size on the outside of the wide receiver position. Somebody that Lamar's got some confidence throwing to because of their physical shape.
Dan, I agree. I agree with your guys' assessment that you got a tight end. In Hollywood Brown, you got a guy who can get separation. I don't think he's a number one, but you don't have a number one. You don't have multiple guys who can get separation. And the reason I think you two are missing it here is because really what is being said about the Ravens? Why is the passing attack so bad, right? And the question is it, you could say it's some of both, but is this a Lamar Jackson issue?
No.
Has he not evolved as a receiver because he had a very promising rookie campaign as a passer? Or is it a receiving core issue? And what I'm saying is, if the GM is coming out and defending the receiving core, then what he's saying is that's not the issue. But as you said, Dan, Lamar won MVP. So we're not concerned about can he be a valuable player. We're concerned about about the way he's evolving as a passer. And let me like make it in plain English. People are saying, is this the quarterback's fault or the receiver's fault? You can say whatever you want, offensive line and scheme and da-da-da. There are a million different things you can point to. Not that they have a bad offensive line. I'm just saying you can point to a lot of things in football. But for the fans, in their mind's eye, because he was pressing the fans, is it the quarterback or the receivers? And what the GM came out and said is, this ain't the receivers. And what I'm saying is, I think that's insulting to the quarterback because I think it is the receivers. And I think what we really need to know about Lamar Jackson is, how is he going to be as a passer when he has more dynamic options on offense?
I would agree with you, Max. I would think the point that I would like to make is, quarterback evolution is not an individual effort. It is not singularly tied to the quarterback. Quarterback evolution is a group effort. How well does the offensive line play? play, the scheme development. Does the scheme grow? Does the coach realize Lamar's really, really good at this stuff? He doesn't excel in this stuff. We're just going to do a bunch of that stuff. Do the receivers come along with them? They lost that three tight end set. That was a big deal as last year as well when it comes to the overall production and development. If we look at Josh Allen in Buffalo and his development, we look at Derek Carr and his development from Las Vegas from a couple years ago. And so it's not a Lamar thing. I can make that point abundantly clear. It is not a Lamar thing. They need to get better receivers that have a different skill set. They've got some smaller receivers, Duvernay, Hollywood Brown, Snead, that are slot receivers that they get open quickly, and the paramount aspect is ball placement. Ball placement. Lamar is never going to excel in ball placement. He doesn't need to, but he's still an accurate thrower. So they need somebody on the outside that they could just put out there and go, Lamar, it's a one-on-one option. Give him the opportunity to make a contested catch. I think Rashad Bateman becomes his Allen Robinson, okay? And that's why I think it's a big deal for them to get size.
Hold on. You know what? Well, we listen, can we stop it here? The fact of the matter is this, DaCosta. If Lamar Jackson didn't like his receivers, would he say so publicly? Would you say so publicly?
Right.
You know good and damn well, DaCosta, you wouldn't. So guess what? Why are you coming out now? Lamar likes his receivers. What's he supposed to say? I don't like them? I mean, stop. Just stop.
All I know is this. Since Lamar was drafted, his receivers rank last in the NFL in receiving yards.
Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Dell Tech Fest starts now. To thank you for 40 unforgettable years, Dell Technologies is celebrating with anniversary savings on their most popular tech. For a limited time only, save on select next-gen PCs like the XPS 13 Plus, where you can make the everyday easier with Windows 11. Unleash more possibilities with cutting-edge systems, our most advanced features, and great prices. Plus, curate your dream setup with deals on select monitors, mice, and more must-have electronics and accessories. When you shop online at Dell.com/deals, you'll have access to state-of-the-art technology to match your forward-thinking spirit and free shipping on everything. Anniversary savings awaits you for a limited time only at Dell.com/deals. That's Dell.com/deals. I'm Molly Karam, and I hope you have a fabulous day. Thanks for listening to the pod. Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. We all know breakfast is part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any, and you know what happens. You grab a cup of coffee, you skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, even waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Come on. Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Time for the latest edition of First Take Draft Blitz. Today, we preview the New York Giants, who hold the 11th pick in this month's draft. Quarterback Daniel Jones enters his third season with Big Blue. He's 8-18 as a starter for the G-men, but the offense should be an upgrade with star running back Saquon Barkley expected to return from a torn ACL and the signing of receiver Kenny Galladay. Max Kellerman, they got Danny Dimes in the fold, but should the Giants consider trading up into the top 10 and getting a QB?
Yes, they should. And they need help on the offensive line, and they need an edge rusher. Otherwise, they actually don't have that many needs. I think Danny Dimes has a chance to be a good quarterback. If someone said, do I think he's going to be a great quarterback? I would say no. I don't think he's going to be a great quarterback, but I think he could be a good one. But I think he could be a good one. He didn't make a lot of progress year two. I know he didn't have Saquon. He didn't have a great offensive line. All that's true. But he didn't make – like, year two is the progress year. Now, if the Giants were drafting at 27 and they had to mortgage the farm in order to move up, I would say no. What I'm talking about is this. I've seen mock drafts recently where Trey Lance is going 9th. If Trey Lance is sitting there at 9 and you're at 11 and you could move up a couple of slots and snag a guy who has potentially greatness in him, potentially, but who needs some time. You know, if you draft a Trey Lance, you don't come in and start him right away. So you can still see what you have in Daniel Jones. And if you have something great, well, then great. But if you don't and you look and you go, he's okay, I'd like a little more, you got your guy. And he has a year or two to see. So I'd say under these circumstances, given the fact that the Giants actually don't have that many needs, if they got quarterback right. Why not make sure you got quarterback right if a guy who can be potentially great is sitting there one or two slots above where you're going to pick?
So many holes in your argument, we don't even have time to get into it. Number one, Trevor Lawrence is the projected number one overall pick. Everybody else is questionable right now. We believe in Justin Fields, but there's a whole bunch of people that have thrown questions into the mix. Zach Wilson, the level of competition he's going against at BYU. Trey Lance coming from North Dakota State. Mac Jones, considered talented and accurate, but had some issues in terms of, you know, his mobility, all of these kind of things that they've talked about. The only surefire bet is Trevor Lawrence. And after that, there is no surefire bet. So why would you trade Daniel Jones to create more questions for yourself at the quarterback position when nobody knows what those other guys are going to do, okay? That's number one. Number two, there were questions about the offensive line. You brought that up in the past. Number three, you've been raving about the pickup of Galladay. Well, if you got him, right, what does that mean? That means you wasn't satisfied with what you had in Sterling Shepard and Evan Ingram or Darius Slayton, whomever the case may be. Plus, you didn't have Saquon Barkley. But now you're getting him back. And last year was Joe Judge's first year, which we all, especially myself, have recognized. This guy was incredibly impressive in his first year. And that's what all of those question marks, questions at the offensive line, questions by the wide receivers, okay? Saquon Barkley, so you really didn't have a running game, all right? They were the 31st ranked offense in points, 31st ranked in yards, that's second to last in both categories. And obviously Saquon Barkley's absence had a lot to do with that. So what do? You get Daniel Jones back in the mix. You make sure that Joe Judge has him in tow with Saquon Barkley. And now you've got some receivers, not just in Galladay, but you're going to keep a few of those dudes you already have. Plus, you're about to draft a wide receiver if we are to believe Mel Kiper. And there's no reason that we shouldn't in terms of somebody as electrifying as Jaylen Waddle. Why would you move Daniel Jones when there's so many questions at the quarterback position?
Okay,
Dan, what do you think?
About who to draft. Why would you do that? Makes no sense.
Yeah. Max is everything that's wrong with quarterback perspective in the NFL right now. Max, you trying to tell me that the Giants moving off and going up to go get a quarterback off of Daniel Jones is like people telling me Fessy's a good teammate on the challenge because he beat Kyle in Hall Brawl? No, he's not. Kyle was a layup. He's still a bad teammate. Daniel Jones in 2 years is 35 touchdowns, 22 picks, and 63% completion percentage. And I would make the claim that his situation hasn't been all that different than Sam Darnold's. His support hasn't been all that different than Sam Darnold's, who was historically bad. Yeah. Coaching change, god-awful offensive line, an average run game, substandard wide receivers on the outside, at least performance-wide, a disappointing tight end. So what Daniel Jones has done what to go sit there and go, we got to move off of him? He's got 35 touchdowns and 22 picks. And this is what happens when you take a player at six and you expect him to become something that he's not. And that's what I said on draft night with Daniel Jones. He is not a player that is going to wow you, that he's going to be an unbelievable quarterback. But you took him at six in New York. And so now Giants fans, like Max Kellerman, expect him to be unbelievable. And he's not talented enough to be unbelievable. No. And so often, we want to move off young quarterbacks. Imagine if the Buffalo Bills decided before last year to move off of Josh Allen. Because you know what? He hadn't become what they hoped to become. No. They didn't use that as an excuse. They said, we have to get better. Let's go to our offensive line and improve. Great. Let's go get a number one receiver. Stephon Diggs. Great. Let's improve our defense. Now the quarterback has a chance to show us what he is. And I would say even this. Daniel Jones still doesn't have the proper support in New York to show us what he can potentially be because it's the same offensive line. The Giants don't need to panic at quarterback right now. You still have 2 years to figure out who and what Daniel Jones is. He's got one pretty darn good year as a rookie and one bad year last year. And Max, you say the second year development is, why would you expect him to develop last year? No offseason, new head coach, average offensive scheme, below average support. What quarterback was going to develop last year in New York? Which one?
Well, I would appreciate if the both of you didn't put words in my mouth. Number one, I didn't say trade Daniel Jones. And number two, Dan, I didn't even say necessarily move off him. But you're right. Drafted Daniel Jones is not going to wow you. He's not going to be a great quarterback. Well, damn it, I want a great quarterback. I'd like a guy at least with a chance to be great. So what I am saying, which I said very clearly, but I'll say it again for you two, because apparently you didn't hear it the first time, is what a project like Trey Lance allows you to do. And I'm not saying move up 20 slots. I'm saying if he's there at 9 or 10, you're at 11, you jump up and grab him. Doesn't take that much draft capital, like to move up to 2 or something like that. What you do at that point is you see. Now there are no excuses for Daniel Jones. You'll take an offensive lineman in the second round. You'll try and find a pass rusher because that's on the outside because actually your defense is pretty good.
See,
now you'll see if you have something in Daniel Jones in the next couple of years. Great. Now you have an excellent prospect as a backup. He has not only backup value, but trade value. Number one. Number two.
And then you wonder why we're confused.
Doesn't turn out to be a great quarterback.
We barely understand what the hell you're saying right now.
Trey Lance,
you're the one confusing everybody. You don't trade. Well, I never said don't trade him.
Perfectly clear. I said the same thing twice.
Who moves up in the draft to the number two to draft the quarterback, but keeps the one they have when they just drafted them top 10 2 years ago? Who does that?
I do.
Who does that?
I do.
And when you talk about,
I didn't like the pick of Daniel Jones in the first place. He
didn't
has
you say
potential
you liked him?
Still,
hold
but what I
didn't
don't
you
see,
say you liked him once he got
well,
here
and
you saw
like
him compared to
Dwayne
Haskins?
I don't love him. I'd like a quarterback I love.
So now you like him, but you don't love him now. Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
So you
my
want,
bad. You're not in love with him. My bad.
You
I'm
want
sorry.
Him to be the New York quarterback.
Like, love or hate. I like him.
You want him to be the New York quarterbacks. You don't want it to be the New York Giants. God forbid we build a football team. Let's just keep taking quarterbacks till we get a great one. Because there's like 6 of those guys on the planet. And so if we move up to 9, we'll find one. And so in 2 years, we'll use the 9th pick, or 3 years, we use the 9th pick and the 6th pick on quarterbacks. And if one of them doesn't work out, he'll just be a really good backup. Don't worry that we can't block anybody on the offensive line or the fact that we have the 2nd pick in the draft at running back and he doesn't have anywhere to run. Don't worry about that. And don't worry about winning football games. Yeah. Let's just see if we can take a bunch of quarterbacks. No, that's not how you build an organization.
The Giants improved in free agency. They have a good defense. They are missing an outside threat as a real
aggressive
edge rusher,
Max.
And they do need help on the offensive line. But they can't get the offensive
you
line
wanna,
right.
You want
to likely
off
to get something with a second round.
Max,
you want to
move
off a quarterback that in 2 years is 35 touchdowns, 22 picks, 63% completion percentage, with a bad team
thing.
Around him in 2 years.
Take care of the ball.
Just because he's not great yet.
Noah, Trey Lance
I'll
doesn't do turn the ball
the
over.
Just be quiet. The segment's
pick.
Over. We've heard you.
The Giants have the 11th pick. Mel Kiper Jr. has them taking Jalen Waddle. Okay, we'll keep it moving. Tomorrow on First Take,
like
everybody. Our draft list, we take a look at the Philadelphia Eagles. They traded down out of the top 10. This one's personal for Dan and Max, too. But should they consider moving back up? That's Wednesday, the Eagles, right here, First Take.